Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we're doing a deep dive into multiple sclerosis, specifically for you. We've got a stack of research articles, and we're really going to dig into how MS is diagnosed, the different ways it can show up, and what treatments are available now.
Sounds good.
One of the articles we're looking at is an in-depth review from the Australian Journal of General Practice. So, ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
To start off, I think it's important to understand that MS is a bit more complex than a single disease, right?
Yeah. MS is really more like a spectrum of conditions.
Okay, a spectrum. So not everyone experiences MS in the same way.
Exactly. In all its forms, MS involves inflammation in the central nervous system, disrupting that protective myelin sheath around nerve fibers. And that's what leads to the neurological symptoms. But the pattern and severity of those symptoms, that's where the spectrum idea comes in.
I see. And that probably makes diagnosis even more challenging.
It can, yeah.
The earlier you catch it, the better the chances of managing it, right? Especially if there's a chance of slowing down the progression.
Absolutely. Early diagnosis is key. The gold standard for diagnosing MS is something called the 2017 McDonald criteria.
Okay.
It's kind of like a checklist with 5 key principles.
Got it. So what's the first principle?
First, you need a clinical presentation that aligns with what we know about MS.
So what kind of symptoms are we talking about?
Things like optic neuritis, which can cause blurry vision, or partial myelitis, which can lead to weakness in your arms or legs.
So basically a set of symptoms that raise a red flag.
Right.
But those symptoms could be caused by other things too, right?
Right. Which is why the second principle is all about objective evidence. And that's where MRI scans come in. They allow doctors to see those characteristic demyelinating lesions in the brain and spinal cord.
Ah, so the MRI is the key to confirming MS.
It's a very important tool, but it's not always straightforward. The lesions need to meet the third and fourth principles, which are dissemination in space and time.
Dissemination in space and time, what does that mean?
It means we need to see lesions in multiple areas of the central nervous system and evidence that they've appeared at different points in time.
Oh, I see. So not just one isolated incident, but a pattern that suggests ongoing inflammation.
Exactly.
And what about the fifth principle?
The fifth principle is all about ruling out other possible explanations for the symptoms.
That makes sense because MS can mimic a lot of other conditions, right?
It can, yeah. So it's crucial to eliminate those before making a definitive diagnosis.
It really is a puzzle, isn't it? Piecing together the clinical picture, the MRI findings, and ruling out other possibilities.
Definitely.
It reminds me of something I read about doctors being able to spot signs of MS before symptoms even appear.
You're talking about radiologically isolated syndrome, or RIS?
Yeah, RIS. Can you tell me more about that?
It's a situation where someone has those telltale lesions on their MRI, but they're not experiencing any symptoms.
Wow, that's a tricky situation. So they have the potential for MS, but no actual signs of the disease.
Right.
What happens in those cases?
It's a real gray area, and the management of RIS is still evolving.
I bet.
Do you start treatment right away, or do you wait and see?
Tough call.
It's a decision that needs to be made on a case-by-case basis, weighing the potential benefits and risks.
I can imagine that would be a really tough situation to be in, to know you have these lesions but not know how things will unfold.
Definitely.
It kind of reminds me of another term I came across, clinically isolated syndrome, or CIS. Is that similar to RIS?
CIS is a bit different.
Okay.
It's characterized by a single episode of neurological symptoms caused by demyelination. So it's like that first principle of the McDonald criteria we talked about. But the question is, will there be more episodes? Will it develop into full-blown MS?
So CIS is like a warning sign, but not everyone who experiences it goes on to develop MS.
Exactly. Some people have one episode and then never experience another symptom. Others, unfortunately, progress to a relapsing, remitting form of MS.
Okay, so even at this early stage, there's a lot of uncertainty and variability. And on top of that, I read that a significant number of people under 45 have white matter lesions on their MRIs that aren't even related to MS at all.
That's true. About a quarter of people under 45 have these incidental white matter lesions, which can be caused by a variety of factors like migraines or even normal aging.
So how do you tell the difference?
This really emphasizes the importance of careful diagnosis and having an experienced neurologist who can interpret all of this information accurately.
So you really need someone who knows what they're doing, who can look at the whole picture.
Absolutely.
This whole spectrum idea is fascinating.
Yeah.
It leads me to another question.
Okay.
We've talked about the potential for MS, the first episode, but what about the different ways MS can actually present over time?
That's where the different types of MS come in. Remember that spectrum we talked about? Well, each type represents a different point on that spectrum,
yeah.
reflecting the variability in how the disease progresses.
So let's talk about those different types. I'm ready to explore the spectrum a little further.
Okay. The most common type is relapsing remitting MS, or RRMS. It's characterized by distinct periods of relapse, where you experience new or worsening symptoms, followed by periods of remission where things settle down.
So kind of like a roller coaster with those ups and downs.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Okay. What about the other types?
Then there's secondary progressive MS, or SPMS.
Okay.
This typically develops from RRMS, and it involves a gradual worsening of symptoms, even without those clear relapses and remissions.
So it's like the roller coaster has stopped, and now you're on a steady incline with symptoms gradually getting worse.
That's a good way to visualize it.
I see. And then there's one more type.
Right. Finally, there's primary progressive MS, or PPMS. As the name suggests, this type is progressive from the outset. There aren't those distinct relapses and remissions, just a steady progression of disability.
That sounds really challenging to manage, especially if there aren't those periods of relief. Is it less common than the relapsing remitting type?
It is. PPMS accounts for about 10-15% of MS cases, while the majority of people are initially diagnosed with RMS.
Got it. So even though there are these distinct types of MS, the research highlighted that even people with RMS experience some level of gray matter atrophy early in the disease. What does that mean?
Yeah, that was a real game changer in our understanding of MS. It means that even in its relapsing form, there's this underlying progressive element to the disease. There's damage happening beneath the surface, even when symptoms aren't flaring up.
So it's not just about managing those relapses. It's about trying to slow down that underlying progression as much as possible.
Exactly.
So how do you do that?
That's where disease-modifying therapies, or DMTs, come into play. But let's explore that in more detail after we take a moment to reflect on what we've covered so far. It's like an iceberg. You know, with MS, what you see on the surface with those relapses is just part of the story.
Oh, I like that analogy.
There's a whole other process going on underneath.
Right.
And that's what these DMTs, these disease-modifying therapies, are designed to target.
So DMTs, how do they actually work? Is there one way, or do they attack the disease from different angles?
It's actually really interesting. There isn't just one type of DMT. It's more like we have a whole toolkit with different tools for different situations.
A toolkit, okay.
Each DMT has its own way of working, targeting different parts of the immune system that are involved in MS.
So how do doctors choose which DMT is the right one for a person? Is it based on the type of MS they have?
Yeah, it's definitely an individual thing. Choosing a DMT, it depends on a bunch of things, actually. Mm-hmm. The type of MS, how bad the symptoms are, the person's general health, their lifestyle, and even what they prefer.
So it's a conversation between the doctor and the patient, weighing the potential benefits and risks.
Exactly. It's all about shared decision making. You know, the doctor brings their knowledge about the different DMTs, their effectiveness, and their potential side effects.
Right.
And the patient brings their own understanding of their body, their lifestyle, and what matters most to them in managing their MS.
It's a real partnership. Before we get into the specifics of the different DMTs, can you give me an overview of the different categories? The research mentioned injectables, oral medications, and infusions.
Sure.
Where do we even begin?
Let's start with the injectables, I guess. These were some of the first DMTs to come out.
Okay.
And they include medications like interferons and gadafermin acetate.
Yeah.
They're usually pretty well tolerated, meaning they don't tend to cause too many bad side effects, but they might not be as effective as some of the newer medications.
So maybe a good option for people who are newly diagnosed or have mild symptoms.
Possibly, yeah. Then you have the oral medications, which have become really popular.
Why is that?
Just because they're so convenient.
Makes sense.
You don't have to deal with injections. You just take a pill. Some examples are, teriflunomide, dimethyl fumarate, and a class of drugs called sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor modulators.
Wow, those are some complicated names.
I know, right?
I'm guessing those long names mean they have some pretty complex ways of working.
Pretty much, yeah. They all work in different ways to modulate the immune system.
Okay.
But they can have their own side effects, so it's all about finding that right balance.
Yeah, balancing effectiveness with how well you can tolerate it. But convenience is a big factor, especially for people who are busy with work, family, and everything else. What about the infusions? Those seem like they might be the strongest options, but I imagine they come with a lot more monitoring, right?
Yeah, you're right. The infusions tend to be really effective, but they do need more careful monitoring. These are medications like natalizumab, ocrelizumab, alemtuzumab, and ofatumumab.
Okay.
They're given intravenously, usually at a clinic, and they work by targeting specific immune cells that are involved in attacking that myelin sheath.
So we've got injectables, oral medications, infusions. It's a lot to take in, but I'm seeing how this toolkit approach allows for a lot of personalization. You mentioned side effects a few times. Are there any common ones that people should be aware of?
Well, side effects can be different depending on the specific DMT. But some common ones include reactions at the injection site, flu-like symptoms, stomach issues, and a higher risk of getting infections. And some of the newer DMTs can also have a risk of more serious side effects, so it's really important to keep track of how you're doing.
So it's a lot to weigh, isn't it? The potential benefits of slowing the disease down, but also the possible risks of side effects. It really underscores how important that shared decision-making is.
Totally agree. And it's not just about picking a DMT and that's it. It's about monitoring how things are going and adjusting the treatment plan if you need to. Sometimes people might have to try a few different DMTs before finding one that really works well for them.
It's a process, it sounds like. I can only imagine how much MS treatment has changed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing to think that there are so many more options now than even 10 years ago.
It's been a huge change in MS care, yeah. And it's not just about DMTs either. We're really starting to understand how important lifestyle factors are in managing MS.
Okay, that's interesting. What kind of lifestyle changes can make a difference?
Well, one of the biggest things is vitamin D deficiency. Studies show that people with MS who don't have enough vitamin D, they tend to have more active disease and worse symptoms.
So making sure you have enough vitamin D, that's crucial.
It is.
So something as simple as getting enough sunlight or taking a supplement, that could really help.
Exactly. Another important lifestyle factor is smoking. Smoking's been linked to a faster progression of MS, so quitting is one of the most important things you can do.
Right. Anything that's bad for your health in general is probably going to have a negative impact on MS too.
Exactly.
Are there any other lifestyle changes that researchers are looking into?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in the role of diet and exercise in managing MS.
Yeah.
Some studies suggest that certain ways of eating, like the Mediterranean diet, could be helpful.
Interesting.
And regular exercise can help improve strength, balance, and how you feel overall.
It's encouraging to know that there are things people can do in their everyday lives to manage their health, in addition to medication. And that reminds me of something else I was curious about. We touched on some of the emerging areas of MS treatment.
Yep.
Can you tell me more about those?
There's so much exciting research going on right now. One area that's getting a lot of attention is remyelination therapy.
Remyelination therapy.
Yeah. The idea is to develop treatments that can actually repair that damaged myelin sheath.
Wow. That would be huge.
I know, right? To be able to undo some of the damage that MS causes.
Is that something that could actually happen soon?
It's still pretty early, but there are some really promising clinical trials going on. Another area of research that's really exciting is neuroprotection. These are strategies that are aimed at protecting nerve cells from being damaged even more.
So it's not just about stopping the attack on the myelin, it's about actually protecting those nerves themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And researchers are looking into a bunch of different approaches for that, including using medications that already exist for other conditions, developing new drugs specifically for neuroprotection, and even looking at lifestyle factors that might have protective effects.
So it's a multi-pronged approach, tackling the problem from all sides. What about stem cell therapy? I've heard about that being used for other neurological conditions. Is that being explored for MS as well?
It is, yeah. Autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplant is a very powerful treatment that's being investigated for people with aggressive or treatment refractory MS.
Aggressive or treatment refractory, what does that mean?
It means when the disease is progressing really fast or it hasn't responded to other treatments.
Got it.
In this procedure, stem cells are collected from the person's own blood, and then their immune system is basically reset with chemotherapy.
Whoa, that sounds intense.
It is a pretty aggressive treatment, but it can really change things for people who don't have any other options.
Yeah.
The idea is that by resetting the immune system, you can stop the disease process.
Interesting.
And maybe even allow for some repair.
It's pretty amazing to see all the different treatments that are available now or that are being developed. From those early injectables to these really cutting-edge therapies, it seems like the future of MS care is looking bright.
I agree. The progress we've made in just a few decades is incredible, and I think we're just getting started. But there's something else about MS care that's just as important. The human side of things.
The human element. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's recognizing that People with MS aren't just patients, they're individuals with their own unique experiences, challenges, and aspirations. It's about providing care that's compassionate, listening to their concerns, and supporting them as they navigate all the complexities of this disease.
It's not just about treating the disease, it's about caring for the whole person.
Exactly. And that actually brings me to something else that I found really inspiring in the research, the Australian-led MS-Base Registry.
MS-Base. What is that? And why is it so important?
MS-Base is this global database that's tracking the long-term outcomes of people with MS all over the world.
Wow.
It's giving us really valuable insights into how the disease behaves, how different treatments impact people over time, and what factors influence how the disease progresses.
So it's like a massive research project using big data to understand MS on a global scale.
Exactly. And the fact that it's led by Australia, it says a lot about how committed this country is to MS research.
That's fantastic. Australia really is leading the way in advancing our understanding of MS. I think we've covered a lot of ground today, but I'm sure you, as our listener, are thinking about what all this means for you.
It's a good breath.
Personally. Well, that's what we'll focus on in the last part of our deep dive. We'll bring all of this information together and figure out what it means for you, your health, and your future.
So much to think about with MS. We've talked about diagnosis, the different types, all those treatments. It's a lot to take in.
It can be, yeah. Especially if you're just starting to learn about it. Right. But that's why I think this deep dive is so important for our listeners. We really tried to go deep, explore those nuances.
Hopefully it gives you a sense of, feeling more in control.
Exactly. What do you think is the biggest takeaway for someone listening?
I think the most important thing is understanding how crucial early diagnosis and treatment is. The sooner you can identify MS and start the right treatment, the better your chances are of slowing down the disease and maintaining a good quality of life.
Early diagnosis, early action. We hear that a lot in health, but it seems even more critical with MS, knowing that it can progress even when you don't see symptoms.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember, MS isn't the same for everyone. Different people experience it in different ways. So treatment needs to be personalized, you know?
It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. It's about finding what works best for you, working with your doctor.
Right. That shared decision-making is so key, especially with those complex treatments like DMTs.
You really have to work as a team with your neurologist. Ask questions, understand the benefits and the risks, and make sure you're comfortable with the choices you're making.
It's about feeling informed and empowered, not just following orders.
Exactly. And I think that feeling of taking control, it goes beyond just the doctor's office, too. We talked about lifestyle factors, like getting enough vitamin D, not smoking, and maybe even things like diet and exercise. It all plays a role.
That's a really important point. Mm. Medication's obviously a huge part of managing MS, but there are things you can do every day to support your health overall, and those little things can add up over time.
Taking an active role, not just being passive, and it's really exciting to see all the research that's being done, all the potential new treatments out there, like that remyelination therapy and neuroprotection.
It's a really hopeful time for sure. We're learning more and more about how MS works, and that's leading to new and innovative treatments.
Treatments that could maybe even reverse some of the damage? It's incredible to think about, especially for someone newly diagnosed. It's got to be reassuring to know that there's so much work being done to find better treatments.
Definitely. And while the search for a cure continues, it's important to remember that you're not alone in this. There are great organizations out there, like MS Australia.
Support groups, resources, finding people who understand what you're going through, that's so important.
Absolutely. And remember, you are more than your diagnosis. MS is a part of your life, but it doesn't define who you are. You can still pursue your passions, you know? Live a meaningful life, achieve your goals.
That's a great way to put it. Finding hope, focusing on what you can control, and making the most of life. I think that's a perfect note to end on. We've come to the end of our deep dive on MS, but I hope this is just the start of your own exploration.
Yeah. Keep learning, keep asking questions, and don't ever give up hope.
And if there's anything you want to explore further, our team is always here to help you find what you need. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into multiple sclerosis.